staff or advertisers. It's time for Israel is Real. Two Israelis putting a human face on all things Israel. Rahel and Sonia focus on life in modern 21st century Israel, telling the stories of ordinary people living in, loving, and in support of an extraordinary land. Israel is Real is a community-supported program featuring interviews with local, national, and international celebrities, personal life stories, and call-ins. Learn a new Hebrew word every week. Israel is Real. Every Friday on 1590 WSMN. Nashua's News and Talk. And now, your hosts, Rahel and Sonia.
Good morning. My name is Rahel, and this is
Sonia.
And we are Israel is Real. We are two Israelis putting a human face on all things Israel. Boker tov lekol ha'mazinim.
Tzoraim tovim b'Yisrael.
From WSMN 1590, Nashua's News and Talk. As a community-supported program, we depend on your support to stay on the air. So we'd like to extend our thanks to all of those who love and support our efforts on behalf of spreading the good news about Israel. We're still and always fundraising. It's you who keep us on the air, so please visit our website at www.israelisreal.weebly.com, israelisreal.weebly.com, and you can email us at israelisreal1590@gmail.com, israelisreal1590@gmail.com. We love to mention some of our sponsors, and our first one is Vision.
Did you know that Vision is an organization that educates our community about the little country of Israel? Did you know Israel, it's approximately about the size of New Jersey? To receive Vision's emails alert and be informed about Vision's educational activities and opportunities, please visit Vision's website at www.nh4israel.org. That's www.newhampshireforisrael.org.
We'd like to remind you that we've been listening all month to some wonderful music by Shuli Natan. She's an Israeli folk singer who is here in New Hampshire. She'll be giving a concert tomorrow night, Saturday night, at the Jewish Federation of New Hampshire in Manchester at 8 o'clock. In 1967, Shuli Natan captivated Israeli audiences by singing Naomi Shemer's song Yerushalayim Shel Zahav. Today, she's a world-famous folk singer and storyteller. She sings in Hebrew, English, French, and Spanish. So don't miss this one-time-only special musical performance by Shuli Natan. Again, tomorrow night, March 6th, at 8 p.m. at the Jewish Federation of New Hampshire in Manchester. And if you want tickets and more information, please call 603-627-7679 or visit the website at www.jewishnh.org. That's www.jewishnh.org. Oh, lots of wonderful sponsorship. So we'd like to start our show, as we always do, to let you know about a Hebrew word. So our Hebrew word today is
Hakira.
Hakira. Tell us about Hakira, Sonia.
Hakira means to explore, to examine, to search, to inquire, to survey. And we have a couple of levels, if you want. It's to investigate or study or analyze, look into, to explore relationship between socials, classes, and learning abilities, sometimes used with indirect questions, as in to explore where ethical issues arise. This mm-hmm. is one level. Another level can be to become familiar with by testing or experimenting, as in explore new cuisine.
New cuisine?
Yeah.
Okay.
But what it's important for us, it's to travel over, to have a new territory that you are searching and exploring for adventure or to discover something. And today we are welcome to our show, Dr. Ayelet Gilboa, which she is an archaeologist, a lecturer, a researcher, and a co-director of the Tel Dor excavation in Israel.
So Dr. Ayelet Gilboa, as Sonia just said, is an archaeologist and director of the Tel Dor excavations in Israel. Dr. Gilboa, are you with us?
Yes, good morning.
Good morning. We are speaking to Dr. Gilboa direct to Israel, which excites us very much. It's our first time to speak directly with Israel. How are you this morning?
Fine, actually. You know, it's not morning here anymore, actually. It's almost completely...
You're right.
It's almost Shabbat.
It's dark outside, yes. It's almost Shabbat.
Well, we're very interested. We're very excited to have you on the program because... your subject matter is very interesting to us, the Tel Dor excavations and archaeological site. Where is the site actually located? Where is Tel Dor?
First of all, Tel Dor is a coastal site. We're located right on the Mediterranean seaboard, and we're in the middle of Israel, about halfway between Haifa and Tel Aviv, so it would be about a 30-minute drive from Tel Aviv. And today, the Tel, its large mound, is located within Kibbutz Nachshulim in central Israel.
A place that I absolutely adore. I love to be there.
One of the best beaches in Israel.
I remember being on Tel Dor Beach many times in Nachshulim, and it's amazing.
It is.
So tell us about the excavations a little bit. Did historical documentation inspire the team to search at this specific location?
Yes, actually, this was one of the main considerations, because Dor is mentioned many, many times throughout history, and there's no way I can mention here all the historical records, but I mention only those that really drove us to start excavating at this site. It starts, for instance, with Egyptian records of the 12th and 11th century that mentioned Dor in association with a very enigmatic people, the Sikila. We know they were neighbors of the Philistines, but as opposed to the Philistines, who are mentioned very frequently in the Bible, for instance, absolutely nothing was known about the Sikila. So one of the main goals was to try to see what these Sikila actually were, to try to define their culture, etc., which is something we've been doing for almost 30 years now. And then there was also mentioned in the Bible, for instance, it is mentioned as one of the entities that was conquered by Joshua in the conquest stories, something that we now actually think is really myth and not actual history. But then we know that Dor was part of the United Monarchy of the Solomonic Kingdom. In fact, it was a capital of one of Solomon's districts, and apparently a very important district, as the governor there, Ben Aminadav, was Solomon's son-in-law. He was married to his daughter Tafat. So apparently it was a very important place for Solomon. Actually, it was probably one of his main outlets to the sea. And as we will see, and we'll probably talk about this later, Dor's position on the seaboard is actually the main factor in its importance. And then again, we have really many historical records mentioning Dor. Perhaps what I will mention here is that we know that after Israel's demise, after the conquest of Israel by the Assyrians in around 732 BC, Dor became a capital of an Assyrian province. There were actually Assyrians residing in Dor, and controlling the territory of ex-Israel. And then there's a long series of documents from the Persian and Hellenistic and Roman period that is about 5th to 1st century, 5th century BC to 1st century AD, mentioning continuously Dor as mainly as a port city. In this period, Dor was actually not an Israelite site anymore, as it was. We're talking about the period after the destruction of Israel. It was a pagan city, Phoenician city, although we know that in certain periods there was apparently a Jewish minority there. For instance, in the first century CE, we know that there was a small community there with a synagogue, which we didn't discover yet. The site exists till the Byzantine period, till the 7th century CE. We know that there was it was a seat of a bishop. Actually, the church where this bishop resided has been uncovered during the excavation. And basically, the history of Dor as an ancient site ends in the 7th century with the Arab conquest of the area, which actually ended much of the settlement in this region.
Now, I do want to talk about Dor being an important location as a port city, but before we do that, can you tell us how or who and when the recent excavations were started, and who might be sponsoring them?
Well, today this is a joint project between two Israeli universities, which is actually quite unique. My university, the University of Haifa, I'm today the chair of the Department of Archaeology at Haifa, and I have a partner, Ilan Sharon, from the Hebrew University in Jerusalem. But actually, we've been directing the excavation for almost 8 years now, but actually our involvement started much earlier as students. I started there actually when I was in my first year in the university, which was a very long time ago, in 1980. I went to study in Jerusalem, which for me back then was the romantic thing to do after the military service. And actually, I didn't mean to study archaeology. I was planning to go to law school, but decided that on my first year, I'll learn something that is fun. So I went to study art and archaeology. And actually, during this first year, I even went to volunteer in one of the excavations going on in Jerusalem there, at the City of David. And after 3 days in the dust, I decided that archaeology is not for me. But somehow I stuck to my studies, and after the first year, I just forgot about law school and remained with archaeology,
and
was offered already a job at Dor, which I actually hesitated if I should take or not, because it was the summer, and I wanted to travel. But my mother told me, listen, take the job, you can never know how it will turn out, and... Yeah, and this is basically what decided my professional life. So I have been with this excavation since I was 20 years old, first as a staff member and now as a director, as a co-director. And this is actually quite unique because most archaeologists excavate more than one site during their professional career, and I stuck to this one site. People often ask me if I'm not bored, but you cannot be bored at Dor. It's a large excavation, many things going on at every given moment, so I think I will stick to Dor.
I think that's a good choice. With the long list of cultures and civilizations that you're able to uncover there, I think that's an excellent choice. We have to take a break, Dr. Gilboa, and please stay on the line. And we will be back with Dr. Gilboa about the Tel Dor excavations at Israel is Real.
WSMN
and WSMNradio.com.
The Telegraph, keeping you connected to your community for pennies a day. When news breaks, The Telegraph is there. When the community needs a watchdog, The Telegraph is there. When it's time to celebrate the accomplishments of our young athletes and scholars,
The Telegraph is there.
The Telegraph has been recognized for 7 years in a row as the best small daily newspaper. Find out why one of New England's best daily newspapers is your daily newspaper. Get all the information you need to be an informed voter on town meeting election day, March 9th.
All right, class, let's hear what everyone did this weekend.
Jill?
Well, I raised my older sister to a big oak tree. It was at least 100 years old. My mom said I must have set a record or something. And then we went down by a stream and perched up on this huge rock and saw all of these little minnows swimming around way below us. And then I rescued my little brother from an evil slug king who was guarding him at the bush fortress. And my sister and I brought him back to our super twig fort for safety. And then we all laid out and told stories until it got dark. And the Big Dipper led us all the way home.
Whoa! Awesome!
Where were you, Jill?
Yeah.
We went to the forest. It's not that far away. Anyone want to come this weekend?
Ask your parents to take you and your friends to the forest this week and find the fun, adventurous you. It's closer than you think. Check out discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
I want to know why I'm fine one minute and the next my body aches so bad I can't move.
I want to know why my hair is falling out. I'm only 17.
I'm tired all the time. Now, this rash. I just want to know what's going on.
When you don't have the right answers, it may be time to ask your doctor the right question. Could I have lupus? For answers, for support, for hope, visit couldihavelupus.gov or call 1-800-994-9662. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Office on Women's Health and the Ad Council.
There's no limit on the amount of information you can download from us. We're 1590 WSMN. Yeah.
שכל רואה יש לו ניגון מיוחד משלו.
We're back on WSMN 1590, Nashua's News and Talk. We're speaking with Rachel and
Sonia.
And we are two Israelis putting a human face on all things Israel. And today, giving you the direct line straight to Israel. And I'd like to, again, thank our sponsors. One of our wonderful sponsors is Vern Main. Countries depend for much of their success and security on their intellectual prowess and advanced technology. Many companies here and abroad depend on the patent attorneys at Vern Main and Associates to obtain United States or global patent protection for their new ideas. Vern Main and Associates is an intellectual property law firm right here in Nashua. For professional legal counseling on all intellectual property matters, contact the legal specialists at Vern Main and Associates at their offices on 100 Main Street in Nashua or on the web at vernmain.com. That's www.vernmaine.com. And don't forget that Shuli Natan, the music we are hearing, is going to be performing at the Jewish Federation tomorrow night, Saturday, March 6th at 8 p.m., and we'll tell you more about that. We'd like to continue speaking today with Dr. Ayelet Gilboa, who is presently in Israel and is the director, one of the co-directors of the Tel Dor excavations. Dr. Gilboa, are you still with us?
I am with you, yes.
Yofi. We wanted to ask you,
I would like, if it's possible, to describe the experience of being on this site and also to emphasize what is the importance of this site.
Okay, well, Lisa, that's a very long question. So
I make it very short.
Let me start by saying that although it's officially an Israeli project, in fact, it's a very international project. We have every season we have many universities, but also other groups collaborating with us, mainly American ones, and they, as we've been excavating for 30 years, they have changed through the years. So we had NYU and the University of California at Sacramento, and actually Berkeley were our partners for many, many years till 2006 with the war in Lebanon, when they were forbidden to come back to Israel, and Penn State, and many more. And now our main partners are the University of Washington at Seattle and St. Joseph University in Philadelphia. But we have people from all over, as I said, mainly Americans, but German and Italian and South Africa. So it is a very international excavation. And actually, we depend on those people. Most of the, maybe I will talk about this somewhat later, but most of the people working on the excavation are volunteers from abroad. So basically what we have is a core staff, which is mostly Israeli, some American, including the professors, of course, and a very large staff of younger archaeologists, area and square supervisors and recorders, etc. Most of them are MA and PhD students, Israeli and American, and a very large staff, a surveyor and photographer, people working in this site's museum. We have, by the way, at Nachsholim, a very nice museum. It's called Hamizgaga, the glass house, in which most of our finds are displayed. If you ever come to Israel, it's a beautiful museum. And then we have this whole array of specialists. We have an archaeozoologist dealing with the animal bones, an archaeometallurgist dealing with the metals, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a very large staff. But other than the staff, of course, there are the students and the volunteers. And they are really the backbone of the excavation. Because this is conducted as an academic excavation. We do not hire workmen, which is something other excavations do. By the way, not in Israel. In Israel, most academic excavations are really conducted only with students. So our excavators are not just workers. They are supposed to be educated during the process. This is one of the main goals of the excavations.
So I see that it's an extremely international project, and that many people are invited to come and participate. It's kind of nice that since you're uncovering and revealing a lot about many different cultures, that it's also an international project. That seems to work nicely. Can you? We'll say it again, but you are inviting people, volunteers and professionals, to come and work on the site. Do you have a workshop? Do you have a time when people can come? Is there a certain time when the excavation takes place?
Yes, excavation always takes place during July and sometimes till mid-August. So this season, for example, we're starting on July 6th for almost 6 weeks. And yes, we welcome very much people who would like to join us. Usually we're about 60 to 7 people a year, and actually our optimum is around 80 to 90, so we do welcome more people. And I think it's a wonderful experience. After 30 years, we've seen many, many volunteers at Dor. Some of them come for fun. Other come for the intellectual experience or the physical experience, and it is indeed a unique experience. And actually, many of the students also take the opportunity to earn academic credits, either through our universities or through one of the American ones. It's a very, very tight schedule.
Sounds wonderful for people to come. I would like to speak, if you don't mind, if you would tell us a little bit about what has actually been discovered at the site, what is revealed by way of the excavations.
Okay, this is going to be very difficult because, after 30 years of excavations, but I'll try to summarize the main points. First of all, it's a mound, it's a till, so there are layers upon layers upon layers. And the oldest layers date to the Canaanite period, that is the second millennium BC, and then the site exists till the Roman period, till it's abandoned. So we're really exploring a sequence of different cultures, and for each, there's a variety of finds, and there's no possibility to describe all of them. But let me just describe the cultures we are excavating. So first of all, you remember I told you about these enigmatic Sikila people, part of the sea people who invaded the Levant in the 12th and 11th century BC, we now know, we think at least, that we know how to define those people. We have evidence, for instance, that they came mainly from Cyprus and intermingled with the local Canaanite population. And this mixture is also what gave birth to the Phoenician culture in our area. So Dole, for instance, has become one of the main sites to investigate the early Phoenician culture.
A lot of people are interested in that time as well, the Phoenicians,
If you Google us up, you see that in many discussions of the nature of Phoenician civilization, it's at least its earliest phases, Dole figures out quite prominently. We know that at a certain period, this is something we also suspected by the biblical testimony, Dole was transformed into an Israelite center. And we were actually quite skeptical in the beginning whether archaeology would be able to reveal such a political transformation. But now this is something we can actually really follow. The fortunes of the city, the way it changed from a Phoenician city to an Israelite administrative center, everything changes, the architecture, the pottery, inscriptions. So this is something we can actually really demonstrate. And actually the Israelite period, though, under the United Monarchy and then the divided monarchy is something that we are dealing with right now, and we'll excavate some structures of this period in the forthcoming season. So this is really regarding the early periods of Dole, Phoenicians and then Israelites. But we have a team, mainly the University of Washington team. They are headed by a classicist who are excavating late remains, Hellenistic and Roman. And again, there's no point in starting to describe everything we found because, you know, our museum is full of it and our publication are full with the finds. I'll maybe just mention two of the recent finds from the Hellenistic period. First of all, we uncovered an exquisite Hellenistic mosaic. It's a mosaic. Which is one of the finest Hellenistic mosaics found actually in the East. It's exhibited in the museum at Nachshalim. And again, if you Google Tel Dor mosaic, you will find it. It mainly, other than being very beautiful, it testifies to the high quality of life of people at Dor in the Hellenistic period and the impact of Greek culture on Dor. And last season, we find a very, very tiny but a unique find from this period, which is a gemma, a stone that was placed in a finger ring displaying the portrait of Alexander the Great. This was all over the web, and it's a very, very rare find. I mean, there are, we know of such finds, but they usually come from collectors with uncertain provenances, and this is one of the first times such a really exquisite gemstone is uncovered in an excavation. So, and this is, by the way, I think what I describe now also describes the two directions we are conducting our research. One direction relates to really the local history. So as I said, Phoenician and Israelites, and then the fortunes of the city under Assyrian control. But the other direction is issues that concern the history and the cultural history of the Mediterranean basin at large. So the Phoenician question is part of it. And in later periods, from the 5th, 4th, and centuries and on, BC and on, the main, I would say, overall theme is the Hellenization of the East. Because, you know, we all studied at high school that, you know, Alexander conquered the East and then brought the Greek Enlightenment to it. We now know that it was a much more complex process. For instance, that Greek impact on the East started way before Alexander and in a much more complex way.
I think if I were a pirate, I would have come upon an amazing treasure chest here at Dor.
Yeah,
Sonia has a question.
I would like, if it's possible, to make the connection of what you have discovered in Tel Dor and between the site and the ancient Jewish presence in the region. To speak a little bit more deeper.
As I said, there's a specific point in time where Dor was an Israelite center. This happened between the 10th and the 8th century BC when it was part of the Solomonic kingdom. And this is one of the periods that, as I said, we're concentrating on now. In most other periods, Dor was non-Jewish site. It was pagan before the Israelites, was the sea people and the Phoenicians. But the Phoenicians are one of the closest people to the ancient Israelites. So by studying Phoenician culture, there are also many insights we can gain regarding the ancient Israelites. For instance, one of the phenomena we know by archaeozoologists' investigation, the investigations of animal bones, is that there was they avoided pigs, exactly like the Israelites, as opposed, for instance, to their neighbors in the south, the Philistines, who consume pigs in large amounts. So studying the Phoenician culture also tells us about the ancient Israelites. But there's only a very short period between the 10th and the 8th century where there was actually an Israelite city.
It's incredible. Dr. Gilboa, we have to again take another break for our advertisers. So please stay on the line and we'll be back speaking with Dr. Ayelet Gilboa about the Tel Dor excavations in Israel. This is WSMN 1590, Israel is Real.
WSMN
and WSMNradio.com.
Mormart will be hosting a Spring Easter Care Package for the Troops event for March 4th through the 6th, and your donations are vital to make this project a success. Mormart is a nonprofit volunteer organization whose mission is to send care packages to members of our armed services serving in the Middle East. And to date, Mormart has shipped over 24,000 care packages to servicemen and women serving overseas. For details on how to donate care package items, cash, or volunteer, go to mormart.org. That's mormart.org.
Sassy! Sassy!
This week's episode, Bobcat in the Cave.
Gosh, Johnny, playing in the cave sure is neat.
Oh boy, a kitty cat.
Sassy, the kitty cat's yelling.
What, Sassy? It's not a kitty? It's a bobcat? Speaking of cats, you like to stress the importance of adopting cats from animal shelters? Over 5 million cats go into animal shelters every year? And with millions of healthy cats to choose from, it's a shame more people don't adopt from shelters?
This bobcat's heavy. Help, Sassy!
Why bother? We'll just get into more trouble tomorrow?
What's that supposed to mean? Oh, nuts.
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember, adopt.
The Army National Guard.
My name is Robert Elliott. I joined the Guard on my 17th birthday. I'm actually going to be one of the first grandkids in my family to go to college. The Guard's paying for my college and my books. The time I served in the Guard taught me a lot. It's also enabling me to make my life better by paying for college, teaching me the life's lessons that I just wouldn't have received. Hear the story about how the Guard changed my life at y800goguard.com.
Sponsored by the New Hampshire National Guard, aired by the New Hampshire Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Hey, City Hall, we love it when you've got your radios on. Nashua's News and Talk, 1590 WSMN.
We're back with Rachel and
Sonia
on Israel is Real here on WSMN 1590. We'd like to remind you that tomorrow night, Saturday, March 6th at 8 p.m., Shuli Natan, who you are listening to, will be giving a concert. In 1967, Shuli Natan captivated Israeli audiences by singing Naomi Shemer's song Yerushalayim Shel Zahav that you're hearing now. Today, she's a world-famous folk singer and storyteller. Shuli will sing in Hebrew, English, French, and Spanish. So don't miss this one-time opportunity here in Manchester, New Hampshire, to hear Shuli perform in concert. If you'd like, you can come to a special meet and greet, and you can meet Shuli Natan, talk to her a little bit, half an hour before the show for a special price. So please call the Jewish Federation of New Hampshire in Manchester at 603-627-7679 or visit the website at jewishnewhampshire.org. That's www.jewishnh.org. And we're back speaking with Dr. Ayelet Gilboa, the co-director of the Tel Dor excavations. We have a direct line straight to Israel today, and we're enjoying a conversation with Dr. Ayelet Gilboa, who is telling us about the archaeological discoveries and what's being revealed.
Dr. Gilboa, what is the connection between the discoveries and the research that you did and the site with the international culture at large?
We already said before. Basically, the main contributions is for cultures that have connections to the Mediterranean at large, is the Sikila people, the enigmatic people in the 11th century, which we think we managed to actually very well define the Phoenician culture, and then really throughout the Persian and Hellenistic and Roman period, the assessment of the connection between East and West, which is something you can always best assess when you're archaeologically best assess when you're excavating port towns, which were always the gateways, the interfaces between East and West. So throughout the period, this door being an interface is one of the main themes we are investigating.
I noticed on your resume that you have a large number of publications. Can you tell us a little bit about the publications and what kind of research has been written about this site?
Yes, Dor is a highly publicized site, and actually we work in two tracks. One is the professional tracks. We publish many, many scientific papers, and by the way, all the bibliographies on our website for people who are interested. And we are also very, very busy with publishing final reports, professional final reports. This is an extremely time-consuming and also very expensive task. But we also publish occasionally semi-popular summaries for the general public. For instance, good book about Dor was published by its former director, Ephraim Stern, which he was actually the professor who started excavating at Dor, and he was my professor till he retired. He published a book called Dor, the Ruler of the Seas, which summarized the excavations till his retirement in 2000.
Dor, Ruler of the Seas?
Yes.
Yes, thank you.
And this is something that anyone can read. You really do not have to be an archaeologist to enjoy this book. And we are lecturing in Israel, very often in America, in other places as well. I'm, for instance, on my way to give two lectures in London and in Paris in Pesach. So we also try to keep the public in the loop.
And I'm going to ask you something very tachlis, very concrete. Just the kinds of artifacts that you're finding, just for maybe for the youth out there that might be excited by, you know, in America, you go to a site, you find an arrowhead from an Indian, and you're very excited. What kind of actual artifacts have you found?
I mean,
something that would attract
the
youth to come.
Whatever you can just imagine. Figurines and statues and coins and ceramic vessels, both local and imported, from, for instance, for Greece and from Cyprus, and metal artifacts, weapons, for example. So really, basically, whatever you can just imagine, inscriptions and stamps, and you know, these are. It's a very rich site. It's a major town for all of the periods. But by the way, these artifacts are not the only things that are interesting in an excavation, because you learn a lot about the culture you investigate from other media. For instance, as I said, animal bones. They give you an immense amount of information about the economy, about hunting habits or not hunting. We know that our periods were that did not bother to hunt, although the Carmel Mountains that are really nearby were full of game. We also know, by the way, this is a recent development in archaeology, that there is a huge amount of data you can extract from actually the dirt you're excavating. For ages, archaeology used to treat dirt as what you have to remove in order to find the finds. But now we know that you can obtain information about, for instance, the temperature of a destruction layer, about traces of metal industry, although you do not find the installation itself, about plant remains, a huge amount of information. So today, a modern excavation like Dor is not only about nice finds, although, of course, we like nice finds, and we like to find Dor broadcasted all over the Internet, but modern excavation has to take into consideration much more than the finds themselves.
This is very exciting, Dr. Gilboa. I wonder, again, I'd like to return to the question of the experience of being on the site. I understand that you mentioned earlier that there's a summer program that people can become involved in. They can contact you now, and I have the information you mentioned to me. They can Google Tel Dor Excavations. That's TELDOR Excavations. There's a website, and you told me that was HTTP /// and then Dor, that's DOR dot HUJI dot AC.IL. And people can also email you on the website. And again, so it's a summer program that they can already sign up to participate in. And tell us again how long the summer program will be, what the experience will be like, what's the weather? Do you get to go swimming in the Mediterranean? Something very exciting.
Well,
what are the ages? What ages of people will you be bringing in?
So this season we're excavating from July 6th to August 14th. These are usual dates. It is going to be hot and it is going to be dirty.
Which is why a dip in the Mediterranean afterwards will be exciting.
Yes, you know, I've heard some of our volunteers call themselves the Fellowship of the Dirt. maybe I should describe, I don't know if we have much, how much time we have left.
We have about a little bit the
schedule of an excavation day. Basically, we work. I mean, the bad part is that we wake up at 4:30, and we work from 5 to 1 p.m. on the tell, under shades, but it is still hot. So people, by the way, who come to gain a suntan usually are disappointed because of the shades. So we work till 1 with many breaks. Dole is very known for the breaks. We have a coffee break and a fruit break, basically on the and an ocean break.
Chocolate sandwiches?
For people to... Sorry?
Chocolate sandwiches?
Yeah, and we even have, you know, after 30 years with Americans, we even have peanut butter on site. and so we work on the till 1 o'clock. Then we go to, we drive to Kfar Galim, which is near Haifa, the boarding school we stay in, and then there's a break with a swimming pool, and we resume excavation at 4:30, which mainly consists of sorting the finds, mainly the pottery, because there are huge amounts of pottery excavated every day, so we do what we call pottery reading. We assign them dates, we decide what to keep or not to keep, and this is something everybody takes part in. And we also wash the pottery during that. And in the late afternoon and early evening, we have our field school. So there are lectures every day in the afternoon and in the evening in the lecture room on the archaeology of Israel in general, on the archaeology of Dor. There are practical exercises in recording, surveying. So basically people who leave us, I think, leave with a very deep understanding of what archaeology in general is all about, and on our local archaeology. We also invite specialists. There are usually about 4 or 5 a season to lecture on topics that are unrelated or only vaguely related to Dor, underwater archaeology, for instance, mathematics and archaeology, which is a very hot subject right now. And as I said, people can gain credit for actually participating in the excavation and attending the field school.
And do they also get, do you help them see part of Israel? Do they go on Tiulim, on tours?
Yes. We are excavating only 5 days a week, so there are regular weekends. We are not organizing tours, but some of the American group leaders are, so most of our students and our volunteers travel around. Usually on Saturday they rest, and on Sunday they travel. And people are joining us for the entire season, have a long weekend, a 3 days weekend in the middle, so they can really get to see Israel. By the way, people do not have to join for the entire season. We accept people for 2 or 3 weeks, although most of them come for the entire duration of the excavation.
Excellent. We're going to have to close our section with you, but just did you mention what ages?
We have groups, the university groups we have are usually young people, college students, but we have many volunteers that are in their 50s and 60s, and we even have had people in their 70s. For many years, for instance, we had a very large group from Germany. They were all people in their 50s, young people who have retired at the age of 50. They were a great group. So it's up to the people signing up with us. It's excavating is physically challenging. It's not terribly challenging, but it is. Although we have a few positions, there is some possibility to work, for instance, on our site museum, although we cannot have everybody, of course, work there. So we do have people, and actually not few, which are in the 40s and 50s, and even more. So it really depends on the people themselves to decide whether they're up to it or not. And this is something they can, of course, discuss with us. And again, as I said, people are really keen on coming, but do not want to work on the tell itself, or want to work there only partially, are also very welcome.
Well, Dr. Gilboa, we are coming to the close of our program. It was very exciting and interesting to speak with you. Again, anyone who wants to be in touch can come to our website also at israelisrael.weebly.com, and they can click on your picture and we'll get to you there, or they can Google Tel Dor Excavations. Dr. Gilboa, thank you so much for being with us today.
Shabbat shalom.
Shabbat shalom, and maybe we'll see you there.
Yeah, I mean, you're all invited, really. It's a beautiful place.
Thank you so much.
And thank you very much for this opportunity.
Shabbat shalom.
Shabbat shalom.
Shabbat
shalom. Thank you.
We have about 2 minutes to give you our Torah portion of the week, Sonia.
Our Torah portion this week is Kitisa. The novelist Louise L'Amour wrote, "To disbelieve is easy. To scoff is simple. To have faith, it's harder." This week's parasha, we find the Israelites know a free people in the desert commit a most grievous sin, the making and worship of the golden calf in the desert. How could the Israelites lose their faith so soon after so many miracles that they were witness to themselves? For these transgressions and act of faithlessness, God is ready to destroy the people. Moshe, which is Moses, intercedes and pleads on behalf of the people of Israel, remind God of the covenant with our ancestors, Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, and God reconsiders. This story teaches us about the need to investigate ourselves more deeply, to bolster our faith when we feel lost or experience difficult times. The parasha opens with the commandment to take a census of the people and to collect a half shekel from each person. This half shekel reminds us that no Jew is complete unless he or she joins with others. Alone, we cannot fulfill our potential. Together, united in community, we can fully be accounted for and connected to the divine so that our highest aspiration can be fulfilled.
Please,
Shabbat shalom.
Shabbat shalom. Please join the Tel Dor community and for archaeological excavations. We are Israel is Real. This is WSMN 1590, Nashua's News and Talk. Please visit our website, israelisrael.weebly.com. Email us and help support us and keep us on the air. He's giving me the cues and I'm getting nervous. Thank you very much. Shabbat shalom, and Israel is real.